Wake up, wake up.
Hi, I'm Matthew Carlock, and you're listening to another episode of Sleep Deprived Storytime, where I go over the what's, where's, who, how's, when's, and oh my gods of raising my two kids. This is an incredibly exhausting but ultimately rewarding experience. Let's chat.
Now let's get on with the show.
Whoops, missed a recording. So here is an extra piece, a reading of a short story that I've been writing. Yeah, here you go. Bonus! Okay, this is an excerpt from a short story called The Unwanted, Chapter 1. Franklin. I don't have time, so if you want to listen, then listen. Don't speak, don't ask stupid questions. Sit down, shut the heck up, and listen. 50 years ago, a strange and terrifying virus began showing up in the Western Hemisphere. The Ajabu strain was a tropical, blood-borne pathogen first discovered in the deep forest somewhere in Africa. Over time, it managed to jump the pond and appeared in the poor third-world countries and small rural towns of what used to be called the Southern America. It was carried over by migrant farm workers, and let's be honest, no one back then cared if a few farmhands died. I mean, sure. A body found mangled and mutilated always made headline news, but tell me something. How can you report on something if everyone involved denies it ever happened? The families, friends, the useless government officials, so-called, all look you right in the eye and deny the facts. Yeah, people were scared. Too bad they were all scared of the wrong thing. But I'm getting ahead of myself. The bodies. Ooh. There must have been several dozen those first years. All the bodies of those workers just disappeared, poof, like a fart in the wind, gone without a trace. Franklin pulled a deep drag on a cigarette and leaned back on the food-stained, cracked, and broken plastic covering of the diner booth. His eyes glazed over as he inhaled, pupils dilating as the nicotine hit home. His cracked and worn face, in desperate need of a shave, relaxed slightly as he exhaled a cloud of pungent green smoke. He turned and leaned against the wall, propping his dirty boots up on the seat, and looked around before continuing, his voice a smidge lower. No one paid it any mind. At least no one who could do anything about it. So local doctors prescribed homeopathic bullshit remedies or pumped some kind of weak antibiotic into people, and soon the body count stopped climbing and people went on with their lives, thinking none the wiser. Idiots. Well, maybe I'm being too harsh on the Trojans. That's what they're called now, right? How could they have known that they were dealing with at the time? New sicknesses were rampant in the area from what I've researched, and with government doing absolutely everything to cover it up, what you gonna do, right? Anyway, like any living thing, the Ajabu strain needs to spread its seed and grow whatever. But here's the problem. To spread, the strain needs to multiply, and when it multiplies, symptoms begin to show. It causes swelling of the brain, overactive synaptic responses, and spontaneous growth of cell tissue. Basically, it makes the brain grow ridiculously fast inside our skulls until it explodes. Of course, not before a person loses all control of motor functions and coordination. Some whispered reports claim that infected reached points of hysteria and violence, attacking friends and family, even killing their own family members. Stories of husbands torn apart by wives, small arms and legs of... You get the picture. Some infected were just opposite, though. They just stopped. Stopped walking and talking. No eating or sleeping, barely breathing even. It's like that swollen brain gets overstimulated in short circuits. Whatever the reaction, the ending was always the same for adults. Every last one of them eventually turned on their own bodies, tearing themselves apart until sweet death forced its hand. So I ask you again, what could it do? If it multiplies to spread, it kills its host. But if it doesn't, then I guess it's missing the point, right? And that's where the virus gets really clever, really messed up. This new disease was tricky. It was downright devious. The Ajabu strain started hiding from all the drugs and remedies thrown at it. Doctors thought that they had it licked, but really it had changed. No, that's not the right word. It blended, camouflaged, like a chameleon into our bodies. It no longer showed outward signs of its habitation. No, this little bastard dug itself deep down and found its way embedded into our DNA. I mean, shit. Talk about perfect evolution. Darwin's tap dancing in his grave, seeing natural selection work so perfectly. Franklin slammed his fist down on a wobbly table, spilling the plastic salt shaker in his ceramic cup of cold, pitiful excuse for coffee. A couple of heads turned his way, but he waved them off with his middle finger. He motioned to the waiter for a fresh cup, but lowered his tone again before continuing. Anyway, it violates its way down into the host DNA and then waits in a dormant state until it can spread through human reproduction. And that's where all the shit really hits the fan. The Trojans, that's what we call the poor bastards unlucky enough to pass the Ajabu strain to their kids. A whole generation of people who didn't know their bodies were being hijacked to house a dangerous pathogen, carrying it around for years, decades even, until they finally had kids. The Trojans were youngsters when the virus first started spreading and hiding. Young, healthy bodies that could take a little foreign entity and keep ticking. When they started maturing, having babies and whatnot, that's when the full potential of the virus reared its ugly head. Remember what I said earlier, the symptoms when it begins to spread, right? Around the third trimester, old dormant Mr. Virus unleashes a production cycle massive enough to make the Industrial Revolution look like a toddler's playing with blocks. Undetectable, untreatable, the strain multiplies over and over in the baby's brain as it's still developing. One crucial difference, though, there's no skull to smash up the brain. The children's brain just keeps growing. Most of those mothers didn't survive the birthing process. The body's unable to handle the massive heads of the children. I've seen some things in my days, but those babies, those heads. The locals in one time Brazil call them estranos, or strange ones. From Colombia to Mexico, they were called no deseado, the unwanted. People are assholes, but still, after seeing some of those bulbous-headed devil spawn, I don't judge. Most of those estranos never made it past a few weeks in the NICU anyway. But sometimes they did. Sometimes those giant brains of theirs stopped growing and actually began shrinking. No one understands what is going on. Sure, there are theories, like maybe the strain realized the body was about to die and backed off. Or maybe the drugs we were giving them started working. Me personally, I think the babies did it themselves. Reduce the swelling in their brains by sheer will. Whatever the reason. The plan was to keep several of the orphaned ones and run a long-term study on how they grew and developed. You know, bring them in for testing every few years or so. But you know what they say, the best laid plans of mice and men. There were about six of the orphaned children in the program that I ran, the CDP. I wasn't sure where most of the funding came from at the time, but to tell you the truth, I didn't care. My boss above me handed me a golden opportunity to work for him, and I ran with it. New building, new equipment, hand-selected team of top pediatric doctors and specialists. I was in research heaven, and I wasn't about to bite the hand that fed it to me. Right off the bat, those six orphans, though, they were something different. Their giant heads all began shrinking, and for the world to see, they looked and tested normal. almost. Physically, they were fine, but their brains were more than fine. They were evolved. CAT scans and PET scans showed activity rivaling teenagers and college students. I shit you not, 3-month-old infants were showing signs of cognitive potential rivaling 18-year-olds. I say potential because at that point they were still weren't talking or writing. We'd have to wait another 3 months to see any of that. Frankie Teddy Roosevelt snubbed out his last cigarette and downed the remaining dregs of his stale black coffee. The reporter, at least that's what the pasty-faced, bug-eyed nerd in front of him said he was, furiously scribbled notes into an old-fashioned paper journal. The geek even had a pencil. Franklin hadn't used one of them since pre-med, and here was a kid, barely 20, using it like he was standard again. Must have dug it out of a landfill or something, he thought. With a deft wave of his hand, Franklin called out, "Anchia!" The girthiest, greasiest man in the world, probably, behind the counter, flicked him off and went back to drying mugs with a dirty towel. What a shithole, Franklin thought disgustedly. Whatever happened to service with a smile? All right, global uniformity and removal of all things fun and good. Still, have some pride in your shithole, man. The reporter had stopped writing now and was staring at him like a scared rabbit, hand poised over the notepad, ready to fly at a moment's notice. Christ, this kid actually took him seriously when he said no questions. You got everything so far? Franklin asked. The kid nodded vigorously, hands still at the ready. Fine. I hereby decree you can ask one question. Shoot. Now he did it. The poor kid looked like his brain was about to catch fire. His eyes widened in terror. His mouth started working, but no sounds came out. Calm down, kid. It was a joke. Do you have a question or not? The kid dropped his pencil and pad, pulled out a uniform standard computer tablet from the carrying pod he had with him. Yes, thank you. Sir, I have a question. One second, please. Franklin did his best not to roll his eyes. Instead, he looked forlornly at his empty cup. With a sigh, he reached into his pocket and pulled out a 5-note and cleared his throat loudly. The barman looked up from his filth-smearing towel, saw the money, and grunted. Now he should get some service. Mr. Roosevelt, what kind of experiments were you conducting on those orphans? Paige McForeyes was back to writing mode now and eagerly awaiting.
No,
said Franklin.
No?
Echoed Four Eyes.
No.
Four Eyes was dangerously close to having his brain short-circuit again.
Wrong question, Franklin said, watching the barman slosh reheated stale bilge water into his cup.
Something was floating in it. Fuck it. He took a gulp and smiled to show his utter enjoyment.
Wrong?
The kid was stammering.
I'm sorry, sir. Do you want to talk? You don't want to talk about that?
Oh, well, I'll talk about it at length, but not right now. You don't know the whole story yet, kid. You can't get bogged down in details without knowing where you're heading. Ask me the right question so we can get this over with.
Sorry, sir. You last said you'd have to wait another 3 months to see any of that. I'm referring to them reading and writing. Are you saying babies were reading and writing at 6 months old?
There you go, buddy. Yes, and talking. The astronauts were writing down simple words, comprehending flashcards, speaking clearly at just 6 months old. By the time they were a year old, those little bundles of joy could walk and talk as eloquently as any 5 or 6-year-old. I was unnerved at first, but not because of their age, mostly because of how small they were. I mean, they were still kids, adorable, playful, prone to tantrums and squabbling, but they were so damn small, it just freaked us out. For the next several years, they lived normally, but that's stretching the word pretty far. The CDP hospital wing was their home. They ate, slept, played, learned, grew, and most importantly, to us anyway, they were tested in that building. I don't think they ever saw the sky until a couple managed to bust out of the wing.
How did they manage to bust out?
They staged a game of hide and seek and used searching for the hiders as a cover to try and see what was beyond the white doors. They were 5 then, and their intelligence was growing exponentially at an alarming rate. What did I say about details?
Sorry. Nah. Don't feel bad, kid. Fits the story fine anyway. Well, once Jupiter and Hera found the sky, our whole operation had to change. We couldn't keep them cooped up, no matter how hard we tried. Sneaky little bastards. Once they put their minds to a task, they could figure anything out. And I mean anything. One time, they fooled a poor nurse into thinking Apollo had broken an arm just to cause a distraction. Franklin chuckled, patted his pocket for a fresh pack. Damn, out again. The kid leaned forward, eager to please, offering one of his own. A smelly, perfumey stick dyed green, but whatever. It still had nicotine, right? Thanks. Anyway, the real trouble wasn't that they found out how to leave whenever they wanted. I mean, at the time we thought that's all it was, but hindsight being eagle-eyed and all, I now understand the real problem was something much deeper. They began to figure out we were keeping something from them, hiding away the world, lying to them. Can you understand that, man? Can you appreciate the gravitas of the whole situation? Genius-level kindergartners able to trick and manipulate their way through any obstacle suddenly develop trust issues with those keepers. Well, my friend, you don't have to be a genius to see how messed we were from there on out. Franklin took a long drag on the silly green stick, closing his eyes as the smoke filled the lungs. It wasn't half bad. Had a sort of menthol kick to it. Opening his eyes, the kid had stopped writing and was just staring at him wide-eyed. What? Huh? Nothing. Sorry, sir. The kid really should have paid attention to his name. Cast his eyes downward apologetically. What news organization did you say you were with again? Franklin had to shake his head for a second. Stupid green stick really packed a punch. The Alternative News Online Network, Anon, for short, the kid stammered. Right. And you're a freelance writer. Yeah, this was my first piece. Was? It is, I mean? Sorry? Stop apologizing, kid. It's pissing me off. If you're an online news thing, why the pencil and pad? His head was swimming, and he was having trouble focusing. What was going on? He reached for his coffee mug, but missed and pushed it off the table. The shadowing echoed in Franklin's ears, and the room began to tilt. What is happening? Kid? Sorry, Mr. Roosevelt. The pimply-faced, four-eyed prick's image blurred in and out of focus as the edge of Franklin's vision turned back, closing in all around him. They forced me. Sir, I'm sorry. His voice echoed away as Franklin passed out.
And that's our show. Thanks for listening. Please support the podcast by liking, sharing, and subscribing on whatever platform you're listening to.
You can also help the podcast through a monthly subscription through Spotify. For a low, low monthly price, you will get extra content such as readings of other short stories I've written, a chapter-by-chapter read of my middle grade novel, Defenders, unedited interview, bloopers, and so much more.
You can follow the podcast on Twitter at SDSTPodcast. You can follow me personally on my Instagram and Twitters at KCOLRACM, that's at ColracM. And finally, a big shout out to Albert Maldonado for engineering the sound to perfection and writing our really awesome song. All right, see you next time.